KEW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. A change to U.S. and Canadian immigration policies.
The United States and Canada will work together to discourage unlawful border crossings.
President Biden and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau making the announcement in Ottawa. It would allow Canada to send undocumented migrants who cross America's northern border to be sent back to the U.S. The Pentagon will not rule out a new round of U.S. airstrikes in response to the deadly drone attack on a U.S. military base in Syria.
Initial indications are that the facilities were destroyed. In regards to any militant casualties, we're still assessing.
Brigadier General Patrick Ryder, the NYPD, confirming an envelope of white powder was sent to the New York City courthouse where a grand jury has been meeting to consider criminal charges against former President Trump. It was addressed to Alvin, an apparent reference to DA Alvin Bragg. Four former Memphis police officers charged in the fatal beating of Tyree Nichols can no longer work in law enforcement in Tennessee. That ruling today. This is ABC News. Waukegan, Illinois police this morning ended their search for a missing Navy sailor, Seamus Gray. The 21-year-old disappeared Saturday night after he was asked to leave a bar after appearing drunk. Security cameras later showed Gray walking alone through an alley toward Lake Michigan. Waukegan Police Commander Scott Chastain says the investigation will go on, even if the search is over.
We're not going to stop our efforts and our investigators is definitely going to continue. If we develop any other leads, we definitely will be coming back out if that's what our leads takes us to. At this time, though, we just felt we've hit everything we can.
New York State Governor Kathy Hochul moving to ban gas hookups in new homes with the goal of reducing carbon emissions. The proposed ban would start with smaller buildings in 2025 and larger ones by 2028. Existing homes would still be able to use their gas appliances. A second proposal would ban gas or oil-powered home heating starting in 2030. Worn-out furnaces would have to be replaced with electric ones. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Oh, now, wait until you pull up to the stop-and-go light. But when you do, go ahead and save the Civic Media Station to one of your presets. The Cripes Cast with me, Charlie Behrens, and also on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Southeast Wisconsin could be in for a lot of wet and heavy snow tomorrow. Forecasters predict 5 to 8 inches of snow from Janesville, east to Kenosha, and north to Manitowoc. Madison and the Fox Valley should get 1 to 5 inches. It's supposed to come down fast enough to make roads slippery for a time, but it's warm enough that the snow won't stay on the ground for long. Majority Republicans on the Wisconsin State Building Commission are rejecting every recommendation in Governor Evers' capital budget request. Evers' capital budget request is the largest in at least a decade, coming in at almost $4 billion. Republicans are expected to approve a shorter list of building requests later this year. That's what they've been doing in the recent past. In sports, the Bucks are at Utah tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out.
And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
New in St. Paul or CafeLatte.com.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand
up. They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Yes, they do. And we have a jam-packed show. We have State Senator Mary Kunish on later, but we always like to start the show off with the news that you don't hear anywhere else. So why don't we get going with that, Zoe, with the news that you don't hear anywhere else. Welcome.
Miigwech, Robert. Bonjour, relatives. This is Zoe Allen reporting all the way from up in the deep woods of White Earth. Of the White Earth Nation. I come from the Sichangu Lakota people from Rosebud, South Dakota, as well as the White Earth people from northern Minnesota. So tonight, I wanted to start off by talking about a new partnership that the state of Arizona is starting with Native tribes throughout the state to prevent human trafficking. So as we all know, human trafficking is a very big issue in our country, in the world, especially in Native country, as, you know, our Native women, children, and our men, too, are, you know, disproportionately represented as trafficking victims. So the Arizona Attorney General's office announced back in February that they're collaborating with the Intertribal Council of Arizona to launch a Train the Trainer program. So this program will work to increase awareness to help with human trafficking prevention, and it will be culturally appropriate training that will be offered free of charge to all 22 tribes in Arizona. I didn't actually know there were 22 tribes in Arizona, Robert, but there's such a huge Native population there. So this is really important to see happening. And one of the reasons why trafficking is such an issue in Arizona is because it's a huge tourist destination due to its, you know, warm climates and, you know, beautiful scenery. It also, because of that, makes it a hotspot for traffickers to look for potential trafficking victims. And I also just wanted to point out that, you know, the Arizona just hosted the Super Bowl this year. I actually believed this for a while, too, but a lot of people have kind of linked human trafficking to the Super Bowl, saying that, you know, the Super Bowl is like the biggest event that human trafficking occurs at. However, you know, experts have kind of just dispelled that myth by clarifying that, you know, people who are looking to buy sex or johns will do so regardless of where they are. It just so happens that the Super Bowl is, you know, a massively attended event So people have kind of mistakenly linked the two. There's not some conspiracy going on behind doors. So just to make that really clear. But other experts in the field kind of suggest that, you know, if you do see any situation that seems very off, or, you know, you just have that gut feeling, trust it and make a call to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. And I'll give you guys that number. We'll also try to put it up on the screen too. So that number for the National Human Trafficking Hotline is 1-888-373-7888. That is 1-888-373-7888. Or you can text HELP in all caps to 233-733. You can text HELP to 233-733. And, you know, if you ever engage with someone who you think is a potential victim of human trafficking, and, you know, you're safely talking to them, you can also give them that number as well, because, you know, the people on the other end of that phone will have, you know, over 80 hours of training on how to help them with, you know, getting out of a trafficking situation. And, you know, experts also just want to make sure that, you know, if you see a situation that looks dangerous, do not try to approach someone, especially if they're traffickers nearby, and you might not know that. There's definitely a lot of awareness, I think, among Indian country of, you know, kind of trafficking traps. I don't know if you've seen that on Facebook before, Robert, but it definitely comes on my timeline a lot, of just some tactics that traffickers use to be aware of them. I've seen a lot of stuff just in like Walmart parking lots, like are a kind of a spot. If you're in the rural area, like Bemidji area, I've heard of that happening. Even somewhere as small as like Detroit Lakes. So just things to watch out for. And, you know, if you see, if you feel like someone messed with your car or something weird happened and you're alone, you know, I think just call someone, be on the phone with someone, and lock your doors as soon as you get in your car, you know. You can't be too vigilant these days. Right. Yeah. So education and awareness, you know, those are the two most important factors in fighting against human trafficking. Just in Minnesota alone, the National Human Trafficking Hotline received like over 335 tips in 2021. And, wow. You know, that's just reported, right? Like there's a lot more going on that is not reported. But luckily in Minnesota, we are a safe harbor state. I don't know if you've heard of that before, but I think I've talked about it previously, but that just means that we have laws that ensure that young people who are sexually exploited, they're treated as victims, and survivors, not criminals. Because prior to this law, you know, our young people were treated like criminals, which is horrible considering that, you know, they're being exploited. And, you know, they're underage too. So there's also lots of safe harbor resources you can access just by simply going online. There's regional navigators, safe harbor social workers. Many of our Native organizations have safe harbor people at them. I know Ondayung has at least one. And the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center also has people that work in safe harbor. And just so everyone's clear, just to really define this before we move on to our next story, minor commercial sexual exploitation, to define it, it occurs when someone under the age of 24 engages in commercial sexual activity. And a commercial sexual activity occurs when anything of value or a promise of anything of value, like money, drugs, food, shelter, rent, is given to a person by any means in exchange for any type of sexual activity. A third party may or may not be involved. So I think that's a pretty good definition. It's really broad. Given what, you know, our people experience. And there's one more thing I wanted to mention. I know we're got about 2 minutes left. There's actually a benefit happening on Monday from with our relatives over at the Roof Depot station. Wow. Or Roof Depot. So that's, yeah, that's 5:30 to 7:30. It's going to be at the Terminal Bar in Northeast Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. So you can come out to support the East Phillips Urban Farm. There's going to be some music by people like Barb Ryman. And the show is free, but they're really, you know, it's a benefit dinner. So they're strongly encouraging donations. So check that out. You can just go on Facebook, look up the Urban East Phillips Urban Farm, and it should be in there. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Maybe we'll send you there for a live update there, Zoe.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to do that.
All right. Hey, Peeny Geegee for the news. And really, the dig deep in that subject, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that at the end of the show and get those numbers out there again, because it's so important what you brought up with the sex trafficking. And it's a real thing. And we just had our Super Bowl here a few years ago, so we know that. It does follow the Super Bowl and sport, big sporting events. So, hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And up next, State Senator Mary Kunish. We'll be right back. Native American rights are on the ballot April 4th. Vote for Judge Janet Protasiewicz. She values Wisconsin's tribes as sovereign nations and recognizes Native rights with fairness and integrity. Judge Janet understands the importance of issues such as missing and murdered Indigenous women, treaty rights, and hunting and gathering. We deserve someone that knows these things matter. In-person early voting begins March 21st. Check your municipality's early voting schedule at vote.wisdoms.org or call the Voter Protection Hotline at 608-336-3232. You can register to vote at the polls on Election Day with a photo ID and proof of residence. Your tribal ID can be used as a photo ID to vote. Stand up for your people. Vote for someone who will stand up for you and stand up for Native rights. Vote for Judge Janet Protasiewicz for Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Paid for by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin as an in-kind to Janet for Justice.
Your Blue Line Extension Project wants to hear from you. We are working on extending the Blue Line Light Rail into North Minneapolis, Robbinsdale, Crystal, and Brooklyn Park, and connecting it to our growing transit system. Tell us about your neighborhood, your business, your family, and what you need from your Blue Line. Learn more and share more of your story at yourblueline.org. That's yourblueline.org.
At Metro State University, students learn how to change the world their way through in-demand degree programs including healthcare, technology, cybersecurity, and business. Realize your power to change in a learning environment dedicated to equity, inclusion, and anti-racism. Explore 60-plus bachelor's degree programs at Metro State's open house events, online March 28th and in-person March 30th. Visit metrostate.edu/openhouse for details. Metro State University, where learning meets living.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This segment of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Thank you, Zoe. Hey, we have State Senator Mary Kunish on, and it looks like you're in your office, huh?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'll probably be here late into the night. We're putting together our education finance bill. And so there's lots to consider.
Wow. Peeny Geegee, thank you so much for that. And you are a rock star. I was down in, I believe it was Wednesday, I was at the Capitol, and I got to see you running around out of breath and then giving speeches. But first of all, I'm amazed on the good words you bring up, State Senator. It's on point. And then I also mentioned the fact that you and the governor do not have a script. You guys, it comes from the heart and it comes from your great mind. And it's amazing to hear you speak. So, Peeny Geegee, and thanks for those good words and the great work you're doing at the Capitol, especially for our Native Americans.
Oh, you are welcome. You're very welcome. And it's interesting that you say that, Robert, because So I've been at this now at the legislature for 7 years. And I remember in the very beginning being just terrified to do public speaking like that. And I would have to write out a speech and I would practice it. And if I tried to remember it, I would never remember it. I would go blank the minute I stepped in front of people, and who knows what came out of my mouth. And, I read from a script, or, try to paraphrase from the script. But there are certain topics you become so familiar with and so ingrained in, just like it means so much to you, and you have those life experiences. So now you can really speak to him because you've experienced that, or it's something that you've been working on. So thank you very much. I oftentimes wonder, sometimes I wonder, like, what did I just say? I don't even remember. I opened my mouth and all these words came out. Did they make sense? Did they sound intelligent? But thank you. That's always very encouraging. Yep.
Well, it's cool that you said that little story, because I think we all start out that way. And I know, like, people were asking me to speak on Standing Rock when that was happening. And it was like, what do I say? And so I got kind of thrown into it, a lot of speaking, because I was kind of the token Indian that had been at Standing Rock a bunch of times. But yeah, I'm glad you said that for me and for people that are listening, because it takes work, but it also takes listening to your heart and listening to what you say to form a good speech.
Yeah, and when you know the people and you know the program and you know they're so important, you can just, yeah, it's much easier to speak to those things. But when I'm not sure, or I only think I know a little bit about something, I get very nervous about, speaking in public. So you get used to it after a while, but I used to get really nervous when I would have to present a bill. And now I'm not nervous anymore. I'm just not nervous anymore. I still need to have all the information in front of me. Otherwise, I don't feel like I'm doing a good job. But the nervousness is not there because I've done it so many times now.
Yeah, I've gotten less nervous in my job. And I think partially for me, it's, as legislator for Ho-Chunk Nation, partially for me, I've learned so much, and I don't know if this is the right way to put it, but I know the difference between right or wrong. And if I speak up, I do not want to be wrong. So I need to know the information, or my gut feeling is correct before I not raise my voice, but raise it, in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's two educators. We both talk in front of classrooms, but yet, a bigger crowd is sometimes really hard until you, everything takes practice. No one's really a natural, right?
Right. Well, there are some that just seem to be a natural at those sort of things, but, what are you going to do? It's part of the job, right?
Exactly. Well, we can let our audience know what you've been working on and why you were running into the Capitol like you did in Spoke. If you want to just touch a little bit about the bill that's coming up for those 16 organizations, and it was really good to see all that support and the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative.
Yeah. Yeah, so in Minnesota, we have two sort of native urban cores. And in Minneapolis, there's Franklin Avenue, and you've got all these nonprofits and the American Indian Clinic and the American Indian Community Center and businesses and that sort of thing. And in the past, again, we always know that our programs or our needs have not been met by the government or by a lot of philanthropy. You know, maybe in the last 10 years, it's really made a difference. But anyways, so all these different organizations and nonprofits would come to the legislature and ask for funding assistance. And honestly, because I really think because there weren't Native American representatives in the legislature, a lot of this didn't get funded. There weren't people that had their heart and soul into advocating for it. They advocated for it, but they didn't feel it like we Native legislators feel it, or know why it's so important, or the history of why the historical trauma causes all these issues. Anyways, so all these different organizations and nonprofits would come to the legislature asking for dollars, and oftentimes it didn't get done. So a few years back, we suggested, and it's hard because when you have a bunch of different little bills, like for me, if I'm advocating for all of them, that's a lot of work to have to go around to all these different committees, whether it's for jobs or bonding for buildings or education or legacy dollars. So we said, why don't we put it into one big bill? Mm-hmm. And we've done that for the last couple of years. And it's called the Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiatives. And so within that big bill, it's a request for funds for a grant to these urban organizations to continue providing urban Indigenous folks with the resources they need. So like I said, dollars for buildings, for programs, for education, for language. We put it into one big bill. And so then we can just work it one big lump. And right. So that's what it was. That was the press. There was a press conference, and then there was a rally in the Capitol in support of those organizations.
Right. And then they've kind of renamed it this last year, the Clyde Belcourt Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative.
Yes.
And there's things that these organizations, these 16 groups, and there's 14 projects and one vision, as you spoke of, they have everything from, you know, the old 1980s, not well-built buildings that need a rehab or a new building, to helping new Native theater and support new, mm-hmm. new Native theater. So it's a wide spectrum. And, you know, we have what I heard at the Capitol, and I think I've heard this before, State Senator, is that we have like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, urban population in the United States here.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, there's one of the organizations is for homeless Native folks, right. Not just adults, but also young adults, youth that are homeless, are Native kids. There was a building built here in St. Paul, not far from the Capitol, called the Onda Young Center. And so they're providing these really super valuable resources for the community. And the great thing is that those that are running them are just salt of the earth, dedicated, loving people. But we also know that the services that they are providing are culturally relevant. They speak to our people. They're run by, you know, our Native folks. And so along with not just the services provided, but the cultural connections and the mentorship and seeing somebody that looks like them or understands their trauma or understands, you know, their continuous homelessness or medical issues or just need to be with your people, you know, in the community center. And that's what really builds and sustains a really healthy culture and a healthy community. And so I'm pretty bent on ensuring that we invest in those kind of valuable resources.
Hey, do you have, I know you're busy at the Capitol. Do you have another time for a quick segment?
Yep, I'll stick around for a little bit.
All right, right on. We're with State Senator Mary Kunish. And before we get going, I know what you said, the governor mentioned too, that it's Native run and the how important that is. So I think your voice is getting heard and people are understanding what works and what doesn't work in the Native community. So, hey, great to have you on. We'll be right back. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish. Stay with us.
Take care of your community by joining Metro Transit's Adopt a Stop program. Show your community pride by adopting a transit stop. Join us in helping keep the stop and your neighborhood beautiful and report any maintenance needs to us. We'll put a sign at the stop recognizing your efforts. Plus, you'll get 10 free rides every month. Get details at metrotransit.org/adopt. Again, adopt a stop for Metro Transit.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen of the Green News Report and the Bradcast. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, it's Patrick. It's March, and believe it or not, it's almost time for spring cleaning. You're not the only one who's tired of winter this year because your carpets and air ducts are too. Think about the dust, dander, and bacteria living and breeding in your carpet, upholstery, air ducts, and more with nowhere to go. There's only one real way to get rid of that gunk in your home, and that's by calling our cleaning heroes at Zero Res. With Zero Res's platinum-rated cleaning systems and patented ZR water, they will extract all that nasty out of your home, and it will look and smell like a home should. And with the Zero Res Gotta Love It guarantee, you know they will take care of you. This month, get 3 rooms Zero Resified from the Twin Cities' number one carpet cleaner starting at $129. And take $75 off your air duct cleaning as well to get that true spring cleaning feel. Call 952-ZERO-RES or go to ZeroResMinnesota.com right now and say you want the AM 950 special. Zero Res. With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Cloudy tonight with a low of 27, then sunshine Saturday with a high of 44. Cafe Latte is unlike any restaurant you've ever experienced. Grab a tray and pick from their award-winning selections of soups, salads, sandwiches, and mouth-watering desserts. Cafe Latte, Victoria Street and Grand Avenue in St. Paul, or cafelatte.com.
This is Leonard Peltier. I'm in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Clinic, honoring health and tradition.
Thank you, Zoe. Hey, we got Ogama in the bullpen here on the men. She's not feeling too well, but she is here in mind and spirit and her ears, and she's working in the background. So get well, Ogama. We're here with State Senator Mary Kunish, and among other things, we were talking a little bit about the Clyde Belcourt Urban Indigenous Legacy Initiative, but also there's so much more going on, and you are working hard with education. It's so good to hear that people that are working on the education bills, what did you say, four out of five of them are former teachers or educators like yourself. That is just primo, you know, for me to hear. You know, there's so many experts out there that aren't boots on the ground like you and your colleagues have been. You're muted, Mary.
So here in Minnesota, in the Senate, the policy chair, Senator Swadzinski, and myself, I'm the chair of education finance, both of us were teachers. Senator Swadzinski was a teacher for 33 years, me for 25. And then in the House, Representative Yoakim's husband is an educator, and I think she's like a third generation. She's not a teacher per se, but she's worked as a para or an educational assistant. And then, and she's the education finance in the House. And then Representative Pryor has not been an educator, but she is a strong, strong proponent of education. So I think Minnesota will be doing some really good things. I can't say for sure, but we heard a lot of good bills. We've had a lot of incredible organizations ask us to help fund them or to continue funding them. You know, we look at smaller class sizes. We look at how to keep our kids in school and not getting them kicked out. You know, what are the underlying effects of some of these behavior situations? You know, we look at the picture, mental health, all of those things, ELL, English learners, special ed, you know, all of those things. In Minnesota, our hourly workers, school workers, are not eligible for unemployment during the summer. Huh. So that's something that we're looking at to allow them to be part of that unemployment pool. There's just a lot. And the reason we can do this and we can hear these bills and listen to people is because the Democrats are in the majority. We have the majority in the House, in the Senate, and on the Capitol. And when the Republicans were in charge, they didn't even hear bills. I mean, our big bill at the end of session last year by a Republican was like $300 million going to a private company for literacy, which is literacy is so important, you know, especially when we look at the scores and our kids aren't at that reading level that we want them to be. But that was it. There was nothing else. And so we're looking at the whole child and the teacher, what it takes to be a teacher in this world today. So there, you know, hopefully we'll have a lot of good things in our bill to share with the rest of Minnesota.
Yeah, I just gotta say a good word for, and I know you've in the past have acknowledged this, but you know, our paras, boots on the ground, help them out any way we can, whether it's more money or, like you said, that whole summer you can't get unemployment. I used to have a friend that that worked in shipping, and or not shipping, but the barges down at the river, and it was seasonal. So for 4 months, because the river was frozen, he wouldn't work, but he got unemployment, and he got a lot of unemployment because those cats worked and made a lot of money down there. And we have our boots on the ground, our paras and our educational assistants not, you know, have to pay, you know, they can't do unemployment every summer. So That's a hard deal. We want to keep those people. We want our paras, and if they want the opportunity sometime to become teachers, we want to be able to do that, especially with the shortage of teachers. And that's a great shot that you got there, Mary, with the, you got a nice office with the Capitol in the background there.
Look at that. There's the Minnesota Capitol right behind me.
It's good for us here on Facebook Live and YouTube, but our listening audience all over the country can't see that, but it's beautiful, everybody.
Just have to come visit in person then.
Yeah, I definitely am going to be down there because I have a bill, and I'm sure you've heard about it, that I'm trying to get moving and get some traction on, and talk to the tribes about helping support and letters of support. So maybe by next year I can get it out there on the floor sometime and have something happen. But it's exciting to be at the Capitol and talk to all you movers and shakers.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful when I see a friendly face that's there. I want to tell you a little bit about another bill that I had this week that I got kind of excited about. So there have been a couple opportunities for the state of Minnesota to return land to our tribes, to different tribes. And this week I was able to introduce a bill that would return the Upper Sioux State Park to the Upper Sioux community. And this is really pretty important. It's a small state park, and it's the park itself, or the action itself, the bill itself, transfers state-owned lands that are within the boundaries of the Upper Sioux Agency Park to the Upper Sioux community. This park has fallen to disrepair. The lowlands flood. That's where people used to used to camp out and that sort of thing. There's a little bit of a bluff or a rock formation, and that rock has sheared off, so there's a big mess there. There's one road that goes through the park, and it has a huge sinkhole. There's a couple of buildings that have fallen into disrepair. So there's a lot of work to be done, but this park is really significant to the Upper Sioux because these are areas of battles. And it also encompasses at least 8 burial mounds that are in this state park. And so it would be returned to Upper Sioux. And there were people that pushed back for, you know, mostly because now the communities down there don't have that space to go camping and hunting and fishing in.
Right.
They wouldn't have it for recreation. Not at all acknowledging the value of the spiritualness and the fact that it's ancestors that are still on those lands. And at the end, one woman came, and she was respectful, but she asked that they don't transfer those lands. She's a non-Native, a white woman, because that's also a site of some huge battles. And some of her ancestors and the settlers that were killed are buried in those areas as well. Hmm. So it's really a significant burial site, not just for Native folks, but, you know, the descendants of those settlers, which just sort of like made me even more certain that we need to preserve those lands within the tribe, because we know that the tribe will treat those lands respectfully. And if there are areas where non-Natives are buried, they're going to protect those lands as well. And she was worried, I think she was worried that the tribes wouldn't let them come in and visit their ancestors. But I just look at that as like, well, then you need to build that relationship with the tribes.
Right.
So that there isn't the animosity, so that they aren't closing it off to outsiders. So there's still a lot of work to be done to do this land transfer, but I'm encouraged because we've been doing bits and pieces of this across Minnesota for the different tribes and communities. And this is just one more of those.
That's awesome. And, you know, I see Lori popped in here from Facebook, listening to us on Facebook. She said, right on, land back. And that's all I could think of when you were talking, too, is that this is what it's all about. And when we have people like yourself that are explaining, you know, the burial grounds, maybe we should, if there's other burial grounds, maybe we should all talk about that and then support that and have it as a place of prayer and peace and things like that, and unity with all the people that live up there. So that's just right on. I can't wait to hear when that what happens with that in the meantime.
Yeah, I think one of the state officials said it'll take a couple of years. You know, it takes a while because we have to work with the federal government. We have to work with the local government. You know, there are things that still need to be done within even the Historical Society, because there are historical buildings on there. Oh. There's a building that I don't know if it's the original building or it replicates the storage building where all the supplies for the Indians would come.
Wow.
And you know what? We don't have time today, but we should do one on the Dakota 38. Yeah. We should do a show on and help people understand that piece of history in Minnesota, because that when we talk about a battle, this is what I'm talking about when our the settlers and the natives basically went to war. It's called the Dakota War. And right. It was because the supplies were not given to the tribes, and the tribes were freezing, and it's winter, and, you know.
Let them eat grass.
We'll talk about that another time. We'll save that for another part two or something.
I'll save it for when you are out of session, and then you can guest host the show. Ho!
Maybe we should go out there and broadcast from there.
That sounds good. Hey, State Senator, remember the Ho-Chunks were removed too at the same time, and we'll be talking about that historical setback for us too. Always great to have you on, and always great words. Thank you, State Senator. Keep up the great work, and we'll see you at the Capitol, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Thank you. Wopi Latanka.
We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Take care of your community by joining Metro Transit's Adopt a Stop program. Show your community pride by adopting a transit stop. Join us in helping keep the stop and your neighborhood beautiful and report any maintenance needs to us. We'll put a sign at the stop recognizing your efforts, plus you'll get 10 free rides every month. Get details at metrotransit.org/adopt. Again, adopt a stop for Metro Transit.
Boost your immunity and help protect your community. COVID-19 is still here, but it's not too late to get your booster. Staying up to date with vaccines can help build protection that has decreased since your last shot and provide better protection against newer variants. Boosters are an important part of protecting yourself from getting seriously ill from COVID-19. To learn more and schedule your appointment, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID vaccine. ramseycounty.us/COVID vaccine.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Howl! Howl!
Howl! All right. That was good. You brought my my cousin in on that. Good one. Hey, so who do we got going here? We don't have the governor, Lieutenant Governor today. We'll probably play her Monday with her update. And Zoe, back to maybe what you were talking about in that first segment. You know, maybe we can touch a little deeper on that for the next few minutes here before the end, at the end of the show. Bring up the phone number and how we can get the word out there to get help or to find out. You know, this is just a thing that's been going on way too long.
Right. Yeah. So for anyone that didn't hear the news segment at the beginning of the show, I was talking about a recent proclamation from the Arizona Attorney General's office back in February that they're going to be collaborating with the Intertribal Council of Arizona to launch a train the trainer program in regards to preventing human trafficking. And like Robert was talking about, I just wanted to promote the National Human Trafficking Hotline number since, you know, we have listeners from all over Turtle Island. And that number is 1-888-373-7888. That's 1-888-373-7888. Or you can also text HELP to 233-733. And that's HELP to 233-733.
So you know, I'm kind of a TikTok fan, and I watch these TikToks, as you know. Don't judge me. there was a couple, and I don't know how real they are, but there was a signal for help with people that were in danger could hand signal. Is that true?
I just feel like there's so much information, you know, on TikTok. A lot of it's coming from, some of it's coming from professionals or, you know, people in their respective fields. But a lot of it is coming from just, you know, your everyday person. So I definitely think I've seen a lot of like people reading into TikToks, but they've also just seen some really weird TikTok pages with some kind of like really suspicious videos of like young people. And so I also know that TikTok is, you know, people have tried to crack down on, you know, lots of trafficking going on, obviously, throughout right. that platform. And, also predation towards, you know, minors is a huge, huge issue just in general. But especially on TikTok, because I think it is pretty uncensored. Mm-hmm. And there's just so many people on that. But I have seen stories of people that have done their own investigation into like a profile. Not saying that everyone should do this because it can go greatly wrong. But in this one case I saw, you know, we don't need, you know, amateur detectives out there, you know,
suing you, not people. Me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, something again, like just contacting the National Human Trafficking Hotline would be a really good idea. Just if you do see something suspicious, even on the internet, I don't know what their policies are around, you know, like cyber trafficking, but I'm sure that they would have a much better answer to that than me. But yeah, no, TikTok has been in the news a lot lately. I was just reading about, you know, the congressional hearing on it with the CEO. Lots going on. But to get back to the trafficking issue, too, you know, I think something that's really important to understand is as a safe harbor state, you know, Robert, in Minnesota, we have safe harbor social workers or caseworkers, regional navigators. We have lots of resources. And one thing that people often don't know is that you can reach out to your local, like regional navigator or safe harbor case manager, and ask them for resources. If say you're a school teacher or, you know, someone that works in any field that might engage with folks that have been trafficked, you can ask a safe harbor worker to come and like give a really good presentation, just to raise awareness, because a lot of our people, you know, and like I said earlier, we're greatly affected by this, but a lot of our people in our community don't even know the signs, you know. Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, Zoe, we have the lieutenant governor. She sent us something today, and I'm wondering if we should end the show with that. Are we okay with that, Patrick? Do we have that queued up? I always take silence as yes. So if you're ready, why don't we play our lieutenant governor with an update? Go ahead, Patrick.
Just a second, it's loading up right now.
Hey, go ahead now. And now. Right now.
What? Anine, this is Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I'm joining Native Roots Radio with an update from the Walz Flanagan administration. I am incredibly proud of the One Minnesota budget we've put together, the budget that I've worked towards my entire life, a budget that invests in centering children and families, expanding economic security, protecting health and safety, and strengthening infrastructure and communities across the state. And with the updated February forecast, we have an opportunity to revisit some of the important proposals and investments and go bigger. This week, Governor Walz and I unveiled our revised budget proposal with an additional $1.5 billion in investments. Our revised budget includes increased investments in public safety. The governor and I traveled across the state hearing from mayors, police chiefs, fire chiefs about what they needed to keep Minnesotans safe. Together, we crafted a $300 million plan that would fund every police and fire department in the state. Our revised budget nearly doubles that, bringing it to over $500 million. And because we know that local government's needs don't stop there, we're increasing our investment in local government aid. We're also expanding our proposal to address opioids and addiction by $160 million for a total of $220 million. This includes creating grants for overdose and violence prevention, funding youth mental health and substance use disorder treatment, supporting naloxone administration training and supplies, and establishing up to 15 safe recovery sites across Minnesota. We're increasing the funding available for replacing lead service lines to help communities across the state afford costly updates to increase safety. And we're increasing investments in Minnesota's higher education system to continue growing a talented and educated workforce right here at home. And it's because of the continued hard work and economic resilience of Minnesota workers and families that we're able to include these increased investments. At the core, our revised budget proposals bolster our budget's ability to support safe and vibrant communities in every part of the state. We also had an incredibly powerful signing ceremony for a piece of legislation that is deeply personal to me, universal school meals. Nearly all of us have spent cumulative hours in our school cafeterias, spending time with our friends, catching up on homework, and eating a hot meal before we head back to class. But for too many of our young people, the school cafeteria has been a place of shame and stigma. For our students with different colored lunch tickets, for our students with lunch debt, our students who skip meals. Hunger is often invisible. It looks like a distraction or tiredness or disinterest. It can be easy to miss the students who are falling behind because they're trying to learn on an empty stomach. But we know that 1 in 6 children go hungry in Minnesota, and that 1 in 4 food insecure children don't qualify for financial help with school meals. So to our decision makers who believe they've never met someone who has experienced hunger, hi, my name is Peggy Flanagan, and I was 1 of 6 in Minnesotans to experience hunger. I am one of the children who grew up with a different colored lunch ticket because my family utilized free and reduced price lunch. What used to be then called food stamps back in the day, right, now known as SNAP, we used to put food on the...
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day.
I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.